If God is a father and has a son, who is God's wife? Why do we say in reciting the Apostles' Creed that Jesus descended into hell? What is the unpardonable sin? All interesting religious questions. Questions that at one time or another, at many times, have been addressed and answered in sermons or classes here at Wooddale Church. That's because I believe, for one, that questions are good and healthy and should be asked and should be answered because it's the way we learn. It's part of openness. But are all questions legitimate? I mean, anything that comes to the top of your head? Can you ask just anything at all that you want to? Well, maybe. For while all questions are legitimate, they may be asked in inappropriate ways. There are some people who ask in order to listen and in order to learn. And then there are other people who ask questions primarily to make a point or even to do some harm. We have a long-standing practice at Wooddale Church that any anonymous notes or letters are to be immediately thrown away by whoever gets at them first. But like any system, there are always a few that slip through. And they can be most frustrating when someone who doesn't sign his or her name asks a question. Like, why do you do that? Or why don't you do this? My favorite, or let's say one of my favorites, happened several years ago when we were in our former worship center, which is now the Great Room, and we, on the same Sunday, after the same service, got two different anonymous notes, one of which asked, why is it so cold in here? And the other one asked, why is it so hot in here? And I looked at those and I thought to myself, you know, I really wish I could find out who those people are because I'd like to put them together on the thermostat committee and let them decide and let them set the temperature for the room. Obviously, anyone who asks but who won't receive an answer is asking inappropriately. Or this week, watch on television as the news reporters deal with the different presidential candidates. Listen to the differences in the questions that are asked, because there are some that are asked in order to determine positions, in order to help the American people in the decision of casting a vote for who will be the president of the United States. And there are others, obviously, that are intended to trip up the candidate, to make that person look foolish. And it is those questions that ought to be deemed inappropriate. Usually, Jesus was very open to questions. Any question. That's because Jesus was a teacher. And teachers, good teachers, like questions because good teachers recognize that through a question and answer approach, many people will learn that maybe otherwise never would. So Jesus, throughout all of his public teaching, was regularly answering people and inviting them to ask new and different questions. But there came a day when Jesus refused. It was a Tuesday. And it was in Jerusalem. It was the Tuesday after Palm Sunday, before Good Friday. It was Jesus' last Tuesday before he was crucified. Take a look at that Tuesday conversation for yourself. It's on page 1632 and 1633 in the Pew Bible. That's Luke 20, verses 1 through 8. Actually, let's also read the last two paragraphs of Luke 19, because they also bear on the story. They refer to what happened on Monday of that same week, where Jesus went into the temple and upset the merchants, and it really was what happened here that precipitated the questions that were asked in chapter 20. So in chapter 19, it starts out that Jesus entered the temple area and began driving out those who were selling. It is written, he told them, my house will be a house of prayer, but you have made it a den of robbers. Every day he was teaching at the temple, but the chief priests, the teachers of the law, and the leaders among the people were trying to kill him. Yet they could not find any way to do it because all the people hung on his words. One day, as he was teaching the people in the temple courts and preaching the gospel, the chief priests and the teachers of the law, together with the elders, came up to him. "Tell us by what authority you are doing these things," they said. "Who gave you this authority?" He replied, "I will also ask you a question. Tell me, John's baptism, was it from heaven or from man?" They discussed it among themselves and said, "If we say from heaven, he'll ask, why didn't you believe me? But if we say from men, the people will stone us because they're persuaded that John was a prophet." So they answered, "We don't know where it was from." Jesus said, "Neither will I tell you by what authority I am doing these things." Jesus taught like someone who knew what he was talking about. Jesus had an authority about him. He was a man of authority. Last Tuesday night, our family went to the Twins game at the Metrodome. And after the game was over, unfortunately that night the Twins lost to the New York Yankees. After the game was over, we were blown out of the Metrodome, and we were walking down the street to our car, and the crowd was pretty thick, and there was this older couple that cut across the crowd. And they sort of caught my attention for a number of reasons. Most of the crowd was rather young. In fact, I look kind of old compared to a lot of the people. I was sort of checking out there. But this couple, they were older than I, and the man was, I guess they both were, rather dressed up. But it wasn't so much their age or the way they were dressed. There was just a manner about them. He seemed like, I don't know, he just was walking like he owned the place. And so I had a double take. Looked at him again, and it was Carl and Eloise Pollad that they were walking across the path. And since he owns the Minnesota Twins, I figured, well, you know, he's got every right to walk like he owns the place, because he kind of does. What is irritating to all of us is when someone acts like he or she owns the place and has authority and doesn't. And you want to say, I mean, who do you think you are? Why do you walk like that? Why do you say what you say? Why do you talk the way you do? And that's what these religious leaders were wondering about Jesus. He enters the temple. He kicks out the hawkers who are selling sheep and pigeons and coins. And then he stayed. Gathered the people around him, started up his classes, and began to teach them with authority about God and about the kingdom of heaven. Who did he think he was? Where did he get the authority to do this? Now, the guys who were upset with him, they were from the religious establishment. Three groups, really just one group. The first was the chief priests. They had a system in those days that the high priest served for a year and then retired into a group called the chief priests. And then there were the teachers of the law. They were religious lawyers, lawyers who specialized in all the intricacies of the Hebrew law. And then the elders. And those three groups together made up what was called the Sanhedrin, and that was the governing body, the supreme council of Judaism in the first century. And they figured that they were in charge. They had authority. They were the ones who determined what happened in the temple. They were the ones who accredited people to teach or fired those that didn't teach. And no one had the right to overrule them unless, of course, it was someone who was higher up. And the only ones that were higher up were the Messiah or, well, of course, God himself. Now, I can understand their being upset. I think about it in terms of Wooddale Church. If some stranger comes in here from some distant northern town like Nazareth, Minnesota, or some other place, and walks in and starts moving the furniture all over the place and starts setting up classes and teaching about God and all these things and never checks with the Sanhedrin here at Wooddale to find out if that's okay to do that, you can bet they're going to be confronted. I mean, somebody's going to go see him. Probably a lot of people are going to go see that person and do it quickly. There will be the pastors and there will be the elders. And if they start moving furniture, they're really in trouble because the custodians are going to confront them. And this is going to be a big deal. And we're going to say, who do you think you are? You can't just walk in here and change everything around and set up your own classes. We have rules. We have brochures. We have all the things that we have to do. And you got to get all this checked out first. So these religious leaders come up to Jesus and say, two questions for you. Number one, tell us, by what authority do you do these things? And number two, who gave you this authority? In most cases, those were reasonable, good, acceptable questions. But their motives were wrong. Look back in chapter 19. It's in verse 47. Every day, Jesus was teaching at the temple, but the chief priests, the teachers of the law, and the leaders among the people were trying to kill him. They weren't interested in his answers. They were critics who were committed to his destruction. Besides, this isn't the first time these same guys asked these same questions. You don't have to look it up right now. You can look it up later if you want. But in John chapter 1, they went up to John the Baptist and they asked him where he got his authority. And in John chapter 2, the same group insisted that Jesus perform a miracle. Come on, Jesus, do something and make something dead alive or something small, big. Do a trick for us, a sign, so that we can check you out. They wanted to find out if he had authority and where he got it from. And then where Jesus really came out and answered them in a big way is in John chapter 10. In that case, they asked him where he got his authority from, and he clearly explained that he got his authority from God the Father. He even did some miracles to accredit himself and prove that he was from God. He said to them, I and the Father are one. They picked up stones to kill him. And just as they were putting their arms back to throw the first stones, Jesus said, wait a minute. What are you going to stone me for? Which miracle that I did are you going to kill me for? And they replied, it's written in John 10:33. It's got to be one of the most significant lines in all the New Testament. They answered, we are not stoning you for any of these miracles, but for blasphemy, because you claim to be God. Same people. They understood fully who Jesus claimed to be, and they understood clearly that he was God. No doubt about it. They had asked before. Jesus told them that he was God and why he had authority. They had seen his miracles to prove it. And so this time around, they were not asking to get an answer. They were asking in order to turn the crowds that liked him against him so that they could kill him. They were on the attack and they refused to believe him. By the way, there's still some people like this today. Too many, unfortunately, who ask questions to Jesus and about Jesus and get straight out answers and see his miracles, but will not be convinced to believe. And sometimes they too turn out to be attackers against him. Jesus was great. Just great. He saw right through them. He wasn't afraid of their questions. He was not unwilling to answer, but he had a better way to respond. When I was in high school, I was on the high school debate team, and I don't know that I was very good at it. Our team didn't win a whole lot of things, but it was fun going around to these tournaments at different high schools. And when my group was not in a debate, you could go and you could listen in on other debates. It's just fascinating. Some people really didn't deserve the title debater. They were, I'll say it kindly, they were just sort of slow and stupid. But others were so quick. They were so bright. They were so knowledgeable. It would just grab you. And this kind of thing you would say, oh, I wish I could have thought of that. I wish I could do that. They are so good at this. I read how Jesus handled these tough questions. And I think to myself, I should have had him on my team. I mean, we would have made it. We would have won all these debates. He was so bright, so alert, so insightful, so masterful. What he did was he answered their question with a question. He said, you tell me, John's baptism, was it from heaven or was it from men? Now, Jesus wasn't trying to be slick here. He really wasn't trying to be mean or tricky. What he was seeking to do was to force them to deal with the real issue that was behind their wrongly motivated questions. Remember that John the Baptist was Jesus' forerunner. He was a prophet. He was, I think, in some ways a rather strange character. He was what we would call today a populist. People just loved him. He dressed in non-conventional clothes. He was sort of an anti-establishment guy. He lived out in the desert. He was a shouter. He was a hellfire and brimstone type preacher. He would name people's sins and he would name the people. And he was really something else. And people just came by the thousands. They just flocked out of the villages and the cities to hear him and to see him. And when he spoke, God just grabbed their hearts. He would call on them to repent of their sins, to be publicly baptized as an expression of that. And people did it by the hundreds and by the thousands. It was a phenomenon. He also said that his main job was to prepare the way for the Messiah, and he announced to all of his followers that the Messiah was Jesus. Eventually, when he was martyred, many of those same people, believing what John had to say, became followers and disciples of Jesus. What Jesus' critics then said about John and about his baptism would determine what they had to say about Jesus. So Jesus' question back to them was to find out where they stood and to make them declare it. In the process, of course, he also switched so that he was off the dilemma and they were on the horns of the dilemma. Now, these religious leaders, who are supposed to be so smart and so articulate, were unable to answer. So they had a huddle, and they're back there whispering to each other. And one of them says, what we ought to do is say, it's from heaven. Somebody in the group says, you say it's from heaven, and I'll tell you what Jesus is going to say. He's going to say, if John was from heaven, why didn't you believe him? Then what are we going to do? Somebody else said, well, we can't say that. Let's just say what we think. And that is, it's from men. That John the Baptist, he was a charlatan if there ever was one. It was nothing to do with God and him. It was all a fake. And his baptism, that was just a come on. The whole thing was a hoax. Let's just go out there and say it. Somebody else said, you go out there and say that. All these people who think that he was a prophet from God, they're going to kill you. So you say it. I'm not going to say it. You say it. And so they went back and forth. There's a great tragedy, not only to the words they said, but the process they followed. For there isn't a hint that they were seeking after the truth. There's no indication they wanted the right answer. They weren't after God. All they wanted to do was to get their way and come up with some type of politically appropriate answer so that they could deal with the opinions of the crowds that were surrounding them. There's a heavy warning there for us. Because we grapple with tough issues, with questions of truth, with whether or not a message is from God or is a human message, on what to do personally about baptism, on how to deal with who Jesus is and what he has to say. All of these things, they're not issues that have disappeared. And the question is, when we talk to people and when we figure it out, are we most concerned about what our parents have to say? Or are people from some church, or are those at work, or our circle of friends, or somebody else in the crowd? Are we most concerned about getting the politically appropriate answer to save our own skins and to cause the least trouble? Or are we seekers after God? Are we hungry, most of all, for the truth? Their final answer? We don't know. Get the irony of this? These are the guys who say, we're the religious authority. What authority do you have? These are the ones who have all the answers. They had no answer at all. They couldn't answer a basic religious spiritual question. Even after they consulted with each other, they couldn't come up with an answer. It was a pathetic thing. And by their saying we don't have an answer, they affirmed that Jesus did have the answer, that he spoke with authority, that he knew, and rightly knew, that of which he spoke. And so they lost. And Jesus had made his point. He had proved his case. And so everyone knew there was no need for Jesus to say anything more. He simply said, I won't tell. Neither will I tell you by what authority I am doing these things. And before we leave this, I'm concerned that somebody might leave here with a wrong impression. You might leave here with the impression that Jesus dances around tough questions and doesn't really want to answer them. And that is simply not the case. The New Testament is loaded with examples. Read them for yourself. And there have been tens of thousands and continue to be tens of thousands of examples since then where Jesus has fielded the toughest questions of all. He is not afraid of any question, nor does he lack any answer. He is deeply concerned. That is the point that is here being made. Deeply concerned that he get to our motives and to our relationship with God and to the real bedrock issues. Let me tell you, I've had my share of questions. My guess is everybody here has. Religious questions, spiritual questions, Bible questions, things that don't really quite make sense. I'm grateful that most of those questions have been satisfactorily answered. I found the answers in the Bible or with the counsel and the wisdom of godly Christians. But I've still got a few. I don't know that I can physically take a list to heaven, but I've got several that I'm not going to forget. And I don't know quite how the system there works, whether you check out a computer in the library or whether you just ask an angel or how you go about it. But as soon as I get my chance, I'm going to say there's a few things I'd like to find out. But understand where I'm coming from. It's not as a skeptic. It's not someone on the attack. I'm not out to get Jesus. I'm not out to put down God. I believe. I believe Jesus is who he claims to be. He is God. He is the Savior. He has authority. I don't doubt that at all. Yeah, I've got my doubts, and yeah, I've got my questions about some other things, but centrally, I'm committed to him, absolutely committed to him. And it's out of that that I have questions for which I still seek the answers. Several years ago, a man came to see me who was an ardent Muslim. He said he wanted to ask me some questions. And we talked for a very long time. It was hours. About the Bible and about the Quran, and about the teachings and the claims of Jesus and of Muhammad. This man was very smart, extremely knowledgeable, articulate. He knew his stuff. And it was, for me, both a stretching and an interesting experience. But after a few hours, it was rather obvious that we really were going nowhere. And so I said something that just flabbergasted him. I said to him, we've been talking for a long time, and this could just go on forever. So I'd like to suggest something. I'd like to suggest that right now, you become a Christian. And here's what I'd suggest you do. I'd suggest that right now, you pray and tell God that you've been wrong, and that you are wrong, and that you're sorry, and that you believe completely in Jesus, and you're asking God to forgive you because of Jesus, and that you promise from now on you will be an ardent follower of Jesus Christ. Now, I'd like you to just pray and tell that to God now. I wish I could describe to you the expression on his face. It wasn't that he was angry. He was absolutely astonished that I would say that to him. When he finally spoke, he said, "No." He said, "I just can't do that." And while I was saddened by his answer, I guess I wasn't surprised. The point of that is that questions, they're okay. Doubts, they're okay. But sooner or later, we've got to quit asking the questions and make a decision. We can't just ask questions and linger in doubts forever and ever and ever. We've got to decide for ourselves, do we believe Jesus or don't we? What would you say? And of course, you don't have to tell me. But please tell God. I invite you to do what I invited him to do. Right here. Right now. Tell him you've been wrong. Tell him you've done wrong. Tell God that you believe in Jesus and promise him. Don't miss the promise. Promise God that you will be an ardent follower of Jesus Christ from now, right here, forever. Because it is the best possible decision.